Hi, everyone. Welcome back to The Hopeless Romantic. As always, I'm your host, Austin Chant.
I am your co-host, Amanda Jean.
I thought you were going to do some exciting new voices every time.
But I said it differently. All right, roll it back.
Okay.
Go back.
Hi, I'm your host, Austin Chant.
I'm your host, Amanda Jean. I couldn't even get through it.
You did your best. Speaking of things we're not going to be able to get through without giggling, we have an exciting Valentine's Day episode prepared. It'll only be like 2 weeks late. It's Valentine's Day and we're recording, and we realized today that we would be recording on Valentine's Day, so that's why it isn't a Valentine's Day episode. But these are the people you've chosen to listen to co-host a podcast, and you're just going to have to live with that. So yeah, welcome back to our show that we do. We had a couple quick things to talk about. Amanda has a podcast to recommend.
Hey, Austin, do you remember that time I read a Yuri on Ice fanfiction and became full-tilt obsessed with the author to the point where I was trying to hunt her down to make her be friends with me?
This is not as unusual for you as that anecdote makes it sound, but yes.
How dare you? This only happened once.
This is like a thing you do once every couple months.
That's not true. This is the shining example of when it happened. This is the ultimate, this is the, I hesitate to say only because you may be more right than I'm admitting, but like this is the sterling stellar example of the way I pursue friendships.
Yeah, okay, go on.
So I read a really great Yuri on Ice fanfiction by Faye, AO3 name, spelled F-A-H-Y-E, who also, it turned out, had written fic for Hannibal and Captive Prince and K.J. Charles stuff. And I was like, who is this person? I need to know them. They are communing with me on the astral plane and feeding me things that I need to live in this shitty world. And so I was like, oh, okay, I found their Twitter. I'm going to follow their Twitter. And then it turned out that we had like one or two mutual friends in common, our friend Meg. And I basically was like, Meg, I need you to get this person into my orbit because they don't know it yet. She doesn't know it yet, but we're best friends. We're communing every night on the astral plane. And I think Meg actually did live up to that, and Faye, or Freya, actually friended me back, and to make a very long story about how creepy I am much shorter, she is a fantastic author who is actually shopping around her first novel right now, which I had the privilege to do a sort of beta/edit pass of to get it ready for querying. I'm really excited for it, and I can't wait to give you all new developments when it finally gets picked up. But she's now co-hosting a really fascinating podcast. It's called Be the Serpent. And I don't know how to explain it except that it's this culture mashup of like three intelligent, cool people talk about like Ursula K. Le Guin's The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelis and talk about it being a false utopia and also how it is a weird mirror image of an Ocelot fic in the Transformers fandom. So if that, if three redheaded Slytherin hosts who are all super smart and all super into nerdy fandom stuff speak to you, speak to your soul the same way that it speaks to mine, you should go check it out. I will link it in the show notes. And obviously, Freya did not ask me to do this. I took it upon myself to be as effusive and unsettling as possible. So I recommend it heartily. There's two episodes up now, and I don't know what their posting schedule is, but that seems pretty brisk. Go check it out. It's real good. And you should read the Transformers fic that is discussed in the first episode. It destroyed me.
Is this why you were reading Transformers fic the other night?
Yes.
Okay.
I read anything that Ocelot writes at this point. I've just sort of given myself over to that eventuality. But this one was a harder sell. By the end
sold.
Of it, I was like, why am I crying about these robots? It's bad.
Welcome to hell.
Welcome to robot hell.
I say that like I've ever been into Transformers. That's actually one that I have never gotten into.
Yeah, I've never. But, I mean, I literally had to go Google them and be like, oh yeah. Because I knew like Megatron and whatever, the Shia LaBeouf movie, but that was it.
Well, that sounds excellent.
Yeah, the Shia LaBeouf Transformers movie sounds great. No, the podcast is a fucking delight.
From one Slytherin podcast to another.
Ayy.
I wonder if Slytherin podcast hosts are common. I wonder if you got together all of the podcasters, what percentage of different Hogwarts houses they would be.
I feel like a fair amount of them are Ravenclaws, because podcasting is actually, like, nerdy hard work. But I also feel like, you know how we always have our secondary house? It's like a rising sign or whatever. My secondary house is definitely Ravenclaw, and I have a distinct feeling that it is yours, and also Freya's, and also God knows
who. I'm a Slithergriff.
Oh, God. You unholy abomination. I'm kidding. Yeah, I'm definitely Slitherclaw. So, I don't know. I feel like there's a certain amount of rigor and just enjoying of research and drudgery that comes along with podcasting. Not that this episode makes any of that seem true.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun little episode that we do. I'm really excited for... Do we want to do anything else before we get into the part that I'm really excited about?
I should talk about what I'm reading, because I feel like we're going to be totally derailed.
We
our plan is always to talk about what we're reading on a weekly basis, and unfortunately Austin is extremely busy working and crying.
I was going to say I'm a piece of shit.
You're a piece of shit. You don't read anywhere near as much as me, and that's a shame. And I know.
I need to read more. In fairness to me, though... I barely read anything in January. I did listen to, like, 70 hours of The Adventure Zone.
Yes, but that also doesn't count.
But it's the media that I can... It's a story. I consumed a story.
I shouldn't give you shit for it, considering I'm now on episode 36 of The Adventure Zone. And I've listened to all the experimental arc episodes.
Yeah, a quick roadmap for the episode. We're going to talk about what Amanda has read. And then we're going to do a very silly thing. And then we're going to cry about the things that we're crying about.
I feel like the back third of all of our episodes from now on are just the crying section where we talk about whatever piece of media has affected us. And it's usually going to be me instigating it and then following Austin around going, watch this, read this, listen to this, do this, because that's how it's gone so far.
Yeah.
So I am reading right now... the first thing, I just got my physical copy of Dates, Part 2, which is actually a comic anthology of a historical queer romance, and it's gorgeous, and every time I open it up, I'm afraid I'm going to do something to the pages, I'm going to spill something or rip them somehow, and I can't give a review of that yet, because I've barely cracked it open. But it's gorgeous so far, and I've been trying to read more, like, comics and graphic novels just to be more familiar with the medium. I'm also reading A Taste of Honey by Kai Ashanti Wilson, which is really fucking good so far. Holy shit. I have another novel by Kai on my Kindle ready to go. And I am also reading Beijing Comrades. I'm reading Beijing Comrades by Bei Tong, and I hope I pronounced that correctly. It's actually, I feel like I mentioned it before, or maybe I've just thought about reading it for so long that it's become a sort of echo in my head of, like, read Beijing Comrades.
Comrades!
It was published in China sort of underground in the, like, in 2000, late 90s, early 2000s, and it gained a lot of notoriety, and eventually it was translated and published in the States, and that is what I'm reading now. It's already kind of breaking me, so I look forward to being completely severed by the end of the book. And that's what I'm reading right now. I'm, as usual, not able to do one thing at a time.
Ugh, I have so much stuff that I need to read. I'm excited, something that is coming out soon that I'm pumped about is Beyond 2. Mm-hmm. Beyond is a queer sci-fi fantasy comics anthology. The first one is really awesome. It came out a couple years ago, and the second one is coming out, well, I think there will be copies at Emerald City Comic Con, maybe, which is in a few weeks.
Shortly.
So quite soon. And our dear friend Kizzy Young has a wonderful FF story in that I'm super excited about, because of course I got to see some behind the scenes sneak peeks, and it's so cute and wholesome, and yeah, I think it's gonna be really awesome. It's a really cool collection because it's very, like, runs the gamut of stories. It's not just romance, it's not just one whatever, it's very, like, all kinds of different stories, from romance to, like, straight sci-fi fantasy to horror to tragedy, and you get to experience all kinds of emotions. You get to run the gamut.
So yeah, I love
that
one.
That's gonna be awesome.
I also just love Kesey's work. I realize it's probably poor taste to recommend
my roommate.
The work of my ex-roommate. Like,
yeah.
It just feels like, oh, well, nepotism. But
hey, remember when we did a whole episode about my book that I wrote?
Yeah, but that was educational. It was about the editing process.
Okay. Yeah.
Who else was I gonna ask on THR to make fun of their book with them?
Yeah, that's true.
Who, Austin? I'm an owl. Who? Yeah, Daria would have probably come on.
But I'm the one you know you can make fun of. I'm always here for you.
That's true. You
embarrassing
understand
myself. Me. Ready to be embarrassed.
It's your secret kink.
Oh. Now it's not secret anymore.
Put it out there in the world and it can never be unknown. Let's end that with the world's worst closing.
Yeah, that's a good one.
What if they came to THR for deep, penetrating analysis of queer romance, and we've just let them all down?
You couldn't not say penetrating, right?
It was intentional.
It was just like you couldn't pull yourself back from that place.
Look, we are explorers.
Okay,
we
okay.
fill.
Okay.
You want to talk about the other thing that we're doing?
Yeah, okay. So we arrived at Valentine's Day.
Empty-handed.
Empty-handed, empty-eyed, confused.
Empty-hearted.
Having forgotten about it a tiny bit.
All the bit, I forgot.
All bit. I asked people on Twitter if there was anything they wanted us to talk about in particular, and nothing in particular came up. But then somebody on Twitter linked to this article of pies as generated by a neural network, and we remembered that there is a romance novel neural network generator, and so I thought it would be a really nice way to celebrate the love day with romance novels by celebrating what happens when you cram 20,000 Harlequin titles into an AI and
make it spit out
let it try to figure out what it should make. And so I was thinking we could just read these. This is how I think we should structure this. We take turns reading, and then if we laugh at a title, the penalty for doing that is that you have to generate a blurb for that.
Oh, you sick genius.
I would say reserve the right to skip if it's something actively like gross and offensive, because there's probably something like that in here, given that that's like in 20,000 Harlequins, I'm assuming some of them are old enough to have like very shitty titles.
Yeah.
So, Amanda, would you like to go first?
Sure.
Babies.
Babies, babies, and more babies. It's my favorite thing ever in any romance, can't you tell?
Yep.
All right. I'm already almost laughing. Fuck me. Okay.
See, this is also really unfair because I know you're going to have a harder time than I am.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I was like, it's a good thing you let me go first or we'd be here for 10 minutes while you read every single one.
All right. Good luck, Amanda.
Thanks. Rip. Rip me. Mediterranean baby. The baby pregnancy. The baby barbarian. Blackmailed baby. The Greek baby boss.
All right, Amanda, tell me about it.
Hold on, I have to wrap my head around this.
Can we just, I do want to highlight, though, the baby pregnancy, which is my favorite.
That one fucking almost got me. So the Greek baby boss, I'm gonna say it's a boss of babies, not a baby who is a boss, because otherwise, what the fuck is this story? So the Greek baby boss is about...
A boss of babies. Is better to you.
He's an au pair. Like, he runs a daycare. Okay. A Greek immigrant to America, insert name here, runs a, holy shit, what, a daycare?
Yeah, there you go.
Couldn't remember the name of it. sorry, I'm still, I have to not look at this anymore. A Greek immigrant moved to America, opened up a daycare. And it fulfills him because he had to leave his friends and family behind in Greece. And his days are filled with laughter and light, but there's still a piece missing. But then the lady love interest waltzes in. She's a high-powered business executive who, for the week, has to take care of her nephew while her sister is in the hospital. And she has to go pick up this nephew from this beautiful sculpture of a man who she sees rolling around on the daycare floor with these tiny tots. And it warmed and melted her cold, shriveled, business-oriented heart. And
I think Tammy's my problem here is that I'm envisioning, like, babies. Like, like fucking newborns. And this man is rolling around on the floor with babies. Just a lot of them.
Just, he's like, you know when they, oh god, I have to cut this. You know when there's monster truck things and they line up tiny little cars in a row and have the monster truck roll over them? That's kind of what I'm picturing, but like babies.
Uh-huh. Slurp.
Kill me.
All right, I buy that. That was a good effort.
It was bad. It was really bad. All I could think about was daycare, and I couldn't think of a single name.
No, I think you did good.
Okay, Austin, it's your turn.
It's my time. If you laugh at something I say, do you have to go again?
No. I'll try not to laugh, though, because I don't want to, like, get you off your game.
I'll do your worst. I have a heart of stone, as we'll discuss later in this episode. That's a teaser. Becoming the baby count. The baby doctor seduction. Oh. Mistress man's baby.
Was that a laugh? I heard fuck, an exciting
secret baby.
Okay, you have to do secret baby because I'm not gonna make you do mistress man's baby.
I love mistress man's baby. Secret baby. Oh my god, it's a double negative. I can't decide if it's a double negative or if it's a secret baby.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't let anybody know that I'm pretending to not have a baby.
Wait, that doesn't work.
Okay, here's what it is. This is like, okay, so this person has really complex relationships. This baby carrier. They have
a fucking the baby carrier.
They have a really complex web of relationships.
Are they a grifter?
Look, here's the balancing act here is that you're better at blurbs than I am.
Am I?
For sure.
You heard what I came up with.
Yeah, well, so far I'm at secret baby still.
Baby carrier. I suppose, you know what, I see, this is the thing, is I was looking at this at these titles through a very, like, cis heteronormative gaze, and you opened it up to, like, it could be a person of any gender, so.
It's true.
Good job.
That's what I'm here to do. Although I think with most of these Harlequin neural network titles, you're probably not wrong. So let's see. Secret baby.
Is this just too hard? Do you want another one?
No. See, this is what I'm trying to figure out how to express this double bind that this person is in, where they have a baby that they're hiding, but only from their controlling boss, who would fire them if it turned out they were pregnant. But meanwhile,
so wait, they have a baby or they're pregnant?
They're pregnant, or yes, they're pregnant, and they're trying to hide it because, but they're trying to hide that they're hiding it because.
They're hiding a baby from somebody, but they're also hiding it from their boss.
Yes. Okay, no, it's this situation. It's a secret baby for that person, but their love interest doesn't know that it's a secret. The love interest doesn't know that this person can't be open about the baby that they are having or have had together.
It's a fucking Schrodinger's baby.
Exactly. It's a web of lies, is what it is. That's what this book is about. It's a web of lies that is going to come crashing down on this person.
How is that romantic, Austin Chan?
It's because eventually the truth will come out, and they'll all be their love will be all the stronger for the honesty.
Yeah, there's the black moment where the love interest finds out that they have been concealing this baby for their job, I assume. Like, they've let the job come first, their job
exactly.
Security. And they're like, I just can't be with someone so selfish. And
they're like, wait, it was a secret baby?
Mm-hmm. How could our baby be secret? And then they leave, but then they come back when the main character does, like, some big, I don't know, gesture. Quits their job really publicly on TV or something. Okay, do you want me to do the cert?
I
that
want
doesn't
you
count.
To...
we'll be here all day.
Oh, no, I saw the next one. Good job. Good luck.
Okay. The surgeon's baby surgeon. Pregnant for the rage. Double baby. It's a irresistible good baby.
Whew, we're out of the babies.
We're out of the babies.
Out of the babies.
Do you know how hard it was not to laugh at pregnant for the rage?
The surgeon's baby surgeon is really good.
Okay. Let's go.
Tycoons, royalty, playboys, and bosses is up next.
Yeah. All right, I'm just going to keep going till I laugh because you know it'll happen. His pregnant prince. The sheik's marriage sheriff, followed by... Don't laugh.
I'm sorry.
Followed by Perder the playboy. Followed by the prince's virgin's virgin. Followed by Storm Jake. Does that count as a laugh?
No, I think you pulled it back.
Okay. The consultant count, which is actually kind of cute. If that were a real title, I wouldn't hate it. Virgin Viking. Prince's round brothers. Prince Dad Sheik? Question mark. Butterfly Earl. Sin's secret Ray. Count Sergi's proposal. No! I don't want to. There's a count named Sergi who has to. Oh fuck! What?
I mean, it's right there for you.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of writes itself, right? Well, I'm trying to think about what counts have power and prowess over. Can they inherit, like, inherit something? Because I feel like if he's a count, he's.
Oh, maybe it's a pun. Maybe he's actually proposing to, like, land use. And it's not a marriage at all. The twist is there's no relationship in the book, and it's just about he's building, like,
a
new house.
It's a very dry novel about getting permission from the city.
Yeah.
And the county to use... appropriated. Yeah, I'm not blurbing that. Fuck off.
Okay.
You want to do the some
I do.
More?
I'm gonna try to read these as entertainingly as possible.
Okay.
Because otherwise this is gonna be a podcast of us reading as blankly as we can, and then suddenly dying.
Weeping,
Okay. The English millionaire investigator. Investigator? Okay. That's how we pronounce that word. The Sheik's convenient desires, which I'm glad they're convenient.
Yeah, they're not usually convenient in romance.
And that actually, good job us, that closes out that category. We're now into getting married.
Married.
Thank God, finally.
Babies before marriage, huh?
Yep.
It's not very classic Harlequin.
Mistress, wife, husband, bride, marriage valley. This is the problem. Okay, I'm actually going to call it, I laughed at the next one because I saw it.
That's
which
fair.
Is her marriage. Which again,
how
is
do
the
you
double
even?
Ones. We've learned that what makes me laugh is the same word twice in a row.
Marriage. Can you blurb that or is it just a
her
fuel?
marriage. It's like, well, it's, you know how the thing... that we do in English. I don't remember. There's a whole... Everybody's read the Tumblr post, I assume, about how like-like is, like, an interesting English construction. The blank-blank. And I feel like that's what this is all about. It's like, maybe she's been married before.
Her marriage. It's her real marriage,
exactly.
Right?
It never really felt like the real thing. This
it
is
feels
her
like a
marriage
sequel.
Marriage.
This is a sequel to...
Her marriage.
Maybe even the third. Her first is like...
The first book is her marriage.
No, her first book is the false engagement. The second book is her legal marriage, you know? Like,
uh-huh.
her... her arranged marriage, sort of, and then her marriage is the end of the highly lauded trilogy.
See, I thought my computer was becoming the neural network, but actually you are becoming the neural network. All right, you're up. First one's a doozy.
Yeah, it's bad. The Husbandman, Missing Broom Bride, The Man's Marriage Touch, The Billionaire's Marriage Valley.
He bought it.
Consultant Bride, which actually sounds kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're on to They Call Me Dr. Love, which I guess is doctors.
Oh, doctors, yeah.
Surgery by the Sea, The Strange Consultant Surgeon. This is going to take everything in me not to laugh at. The Doctor's Children's Proposal, The Man for Doctor Husband. Fuck! Oh, man, I just looked at the one after.
Yeah, you are starting me off on a rough one. But go on and tell me about The Man for Doctor Husband.
So there's a soap opera that is sort of Grey's Anatomy-esque. It's about, you know, a lot of hot doctors and the losses and the highs in their career that they see. And everyone refers to this particular character as Dr. Husband because he's husband material. But secretly, the writers have decided that they're going to make him queer. They're going to make him a gay character. And it's one of the first main characters in, you know, soap opera land to come out with a twist like that. I mean, I know that there have been queer characters on soap operas, but I feel like there hasn't, to my knowledge, been like a main character who's like the flagship of the show who turns out to be queer. Could be wrong. If I'm wrong, at me. And so Dr. Husband is...
You needed to say that with more vinegar. If I'm wrong, fucking at me.
If I'm wrong, fucking at me. So Dr. Husband is written a new character. No, he's not. Dr. Husband is joined on the show by a new character who's going to be Dr. Husband's man. But behind the scenes, this actor and the new actor on the scene who, wow, lots of scenes in there. This is why you workshop blurbs. The new actor on the scene is clashing with the stately and, you know, he's not like a silver fox, but Dr. Husband has been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And he's clashing. He's kind of a young upstart. And so there's on-screen magic and behind-the-scenes tension. And I'll leave it there. Now it's your turn to go with the next one. Good luck, buddy.
Okay. Dear Doctor...
I'll let you have this. You can laugh at this. This is impossible.
Dear Dr. High Kungly Seductive Mistake.
Yeah, there's no fucking way.
You can't. Okay. Next up, my, comma, hot doctor. My hot doctor.
My.
And finally, a objectively not a title
horrifying
that should happen. Surgery Seduction.
Followed by the next segment, which is Under the Mistletoe.
Ooh, it's Christmas time. Winning for Christmas. I can get behind that. Christmas of the year.
It's okay, buddy. You can do it.
I can't laugh because I don't want to blurb this. Oh, man. There's a couple real bad ones all in a row. Oh, boy. Okay. Christmas, pregnant paradise.
You got through it, mostly.
Christmas with her blackmail. Desert Santa.
You gotta. I gave you the other two because I knew. Please give me, you don't even have to outline the whole thing, but just please tell me the, like, basic concept of Desert Santa.
He's Santa in Texas.
Or is he an exotic dancer in Texas who,
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Yes. A go-go dancer, but, like, in a pointy hat who shakes like a
fake
bowl full
beard
of jelly.
Bad.
Okay, all right, your turn.
These next two are of a theme. The Santa Wife, Impossible Santa Wife, The Boss's Secret Conspiration.
Yeah, the neural network is learning about English.
The Boss's Secret Conspiration to Christmas Wish, which I am glad I did not laugh at because trying to unpack that. Mission, Christmas to Knynth.
Knynth.
Knynth. Now we're on to Home on the Range. Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
First one is Forbidden Texas Texan.
It's for me.
It's for you. Also, Midwife Cowpoke.
That's bad.
impossible.
You got through it first.
No, I was laughing at the one beneath it. You can't make me. I won't do it.
You just gotta say it.
Pregnant cow. I'm not blaming that, but you take it. Next round's you, buddy. This is your domain.
Oh, you're right. This is my home. Cattle lover. This next one is specifically for me, Under the Cowboy. And finally, the title of my my first album, In the Mountain for the Tender Seduction.
Now we're on to the raunchy ones. Ooh.
Oh, thank God. I can't wait. The Sexy Affair. Dangerously! Exclamation point. Seduction. Dangerously seduction. Private part. Inheritance sex. The sex lovers.
I'm not even making you blurb that. Can you do this next one?
Can I? Naked Hot Ranger. The Virgin Date of Sexy. And Sex Revenge.
Nice.
Hey, shout out to me.
You got through it. I thought for sure that the Virgin Date of Sexy would get you.
That, yeah.
Sorry. I scrolled down too far. Back up. Can you do the rather depressing books?
I'll do my best. The Blood is the first one.
None of us have to blurb these unless they're incredible. They're just two.
Sob Over the Boss. Married in Fear. Oh no. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sad.
Christmas by Fear. Hot Fear Aper. How did the word fear get in there? The person has notes of like, why is fear in there?
Also, this is where the whole thing sort of breaks down, and so.
Oh, no.
All right, I say I take
Lightning
the
round?
Cause yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'll take this first one. A Risk Worth Dad.
Glored in the Dark.
Glord, spelled G-L-O-R-D. The Juggers.
Can't good.
Oh, no.
Can't good.
Can't good. Seeping Baby Man.
Ooh, that sounds like a medical problem. You should get surgery seduction to look at that. Or Dr. Husband. Never Happened.
I like the straight up refusal there. I Hate the Marine.
Romancy Heart.
That's us here. That's us.
Welcome to Romancy Heart, a podcast.
Uncrystable.
What the fuck? Undercover Mover Come.
Harlequin presents Captive Something Bachelor.
A Perfect Giantess. I'm pretty sure that's probably in like. The Kindle Unlimited store.
Harlequin presents Falling for Her Doorstep.
What the fuck? This is just bad localization. This is just bad. New Cans Buddy Mance.
Buddy Mance. Crashin'. That one's
pregnancy
about.
Pregnancy Hospital.
I love it. Crashin' is about.
Crime and Passion.
Crime and Passion, or it could be about crabs.
Yikes. Oh, buddy, we made it through. And now we have to do a really abrupt tonal change.
First, though, I want everyone to know about the pie.
Oh, yeah, tell us about the pie.
Because the one that, of course, got us here was the pie one, where they tried to teach a neural network to generate just names of pie, not even recipes. It's actually, honestly, a fascinating read about, like, how they taught the neural network about pie and how it evolved. Its first iterations are just it going like pie, pie, pee, pie, pim, pie, pie, pim. Pie, pim, pie. Spelling pie sometimes with two E's.
Pie.
This article is majestic. But yeah, we're starting to get pies out of it. Boten batten pie. Strawberry pie with
delicious.
A cream pie, swish pie, ipple pie. Rassel cream pie, swarrarberry pie, cream pie, cream pie, cream pie again. Things sometimes get better, sometimes get worse. We get to flustican fart, dash flumberry, cheese lane, Rutberry pie, flanberry perrin pie, blumberry yep. cream pie.
Flumberry sounds like a Final Fantasy, like, berry you have to collect.
Futter's wabarb, watery, rasty pasty, camp fibble, insponsible, swarlet cream cream.
How are we going to talk about things that aren't this ever?
Spia take bog pastry.
Spia take. Taking some Tylenol to curb the headache. I know cranberry
rars. Farb fart. How did the word fart get in there?
I don't know. Tart, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Fiji's chicken sugar pie. Sauce and butterms. Spustation pie. Fill pie with bubber pie.
Bubber. Bubber.
You can just see it.
Trying.
It's doing its best. And then it gets baked cream puff cake.
I mean, I would eat that.
Reese's pecan pie.
Yes.
Fried cream pies.
Okay.
Eggnog peach pie. Sure.
Eesh.
Fried pumpkin pie.
Mm-hmm.
Rice crispy chiffon pie.
Okay.
Pumpkin pie with caramelized pie.
Just crumble up some caramelized pie.
But then things take a turn for the strawberry ham pie. Turd apple pie.
Jesus Christ. This Turf neural network crust. Has one thing on its mind.
Pot beep pie. Meat de topping. Milk harvest pie.
That sounds like a fantasy, like, festival pie. I can
Snood pie. Finger milk. Not pie, just finger milk. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's almond pumpkin pie with finger milk.
I want to know how you would get finger milk.
I don't want to know that. I also don't want caribou meringue. Boopy crust. Shepherd's finger tart.
This is so bad.
Scent whoopee.
That one's my favorite. Scent whoopee is what...
Flangerson's blusty tart, which I think is a D&D spell.
I cast Flangerson's blusty tart, yep. And I roll a 6.
Yeah. All right, well...
We gotta come down. We have to de-laugh. So this, 2 weeks ago, I watched a movie called God's Own. I bought a movie called God's Own Country, which had just hit iTunes in the US. It is a British film that finally sort of meandered its way over to the States. And I highly recommend it that you rent it or buy it. And I was particularly susceptible to it. An M, I suppose, and I made Macy watch it with me, and I've been hounding other people to watch it, and just sort of, I think you may have seen me cry on Twitter about it, and so I was haranguing people into watching it with me, and I was like, you know what we should do is you already watched Call Me By Your Name with me, and we're gonna watch Moonlight soon, and talk about Moonlight and Carol, like, we're gonna watch more queer media and discuss it on and off throughout the show, and I was like, Austin, watch God's Own Country with me and be upset. And I finally, although after I had warned people, I was like, there's a lot of, like, farm life stuff in this movie that
And
maybe...
by farm life stuff, I mean that the notes Amanda sent me, the content warnings, included 4 minutes in, he fists a cow's ass. In case you were wondering about the specifics.
Yeah, if you want to watch the... I can just send you my notes if y'all want to watch this, but need some warnings. There's just, like, animal death and some grody, like, farm stuff. It didn't bother me, really, but I was like, I feel like not everyone's gonna be down for this without some warning or the opportunity to look away. And so I sent Austin the warnings and sent him on his way. And so he watched it, what, last night? We got into another argument.
I was about to say no, we didn't, but then I remembered that we didn't have the argument about the film.
Argue about the film.
No, it was just another rehash of our argument over someone's unreasonable reaction to my boot kink.
I feel like we already died on various hills for description, mm-hmm. but this is the one that will keep coming back. This is the bad penny.
I feel like we reached a certain equilibrium with description, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, we just, you know, agree to disagree or whatever.
This, I still think you're wrong. And I'll think it till I'm dead, Amanda. I think you're wrong.
I think you have tricked yourself into... It doesn't even matter. That's what's so sad, is it doesn't matter. It doesn't. But we still argued about it. So God's Own Country is a film written and directed by Francis Lee, and it's set in rural Britain. It's about this, I don't actually know how old Johnny was supposed to be. I'm going to guess mid-20s, mid to late 20s. He's farmer and the son of a farmer in Yorkshire, rural area of Britain with a lot of farms and not much else. And he's sort of taken the mantle of running the farm now that his dad's had a stroke. He lives with his dad and his grandmother. And he's queer and clearly has a lot of repressed feelings about that. I would say, actually, Johnny has repressed feelings about every emotion he's ever experienced
in his whole life. It's not really like
exclusive to a his gay queerness. Thing. No.
Like, it's sort of a him thing.
He's squashed every emotion down into it's turning into diamond in the pit of his stomach.
Yeah.
He is having a hard time of it, I would say, because I feel like, I don't know that much about what it's like for farmers in Britain, but I would imagine it's kind of a fraught industry, and it looked like there weren't very many people. It was just him and his dad and his grandma. He's having like these soulless, like casual sex, I would say bad sex, why are people still using spit as lube, encounters, and like dealing with the farm animals and drinking himself into an absolute stupor, it looked like, each night, and being hungover and just miserable. Like, this family is not demonstrative. Everybody seems to have followed the, like, if we just shove our emotions down, they will eventually turn into diamonds. So, like, you know, that's where Johnny's at the beginning of the film. And there's a migrant worker, a Romanian named Gheorghe, who basically applied for this gig that they want some help during, like, sheeping. I don't know what the word for it is.
Sheep time.
It's sheep season. They have to have some help because Johnny's
the sheepin' times.
For sheepins. And they need help because Johnny is basically the only one who is able-bodied at that point enough to do it. Listen, I'm not ever going to say that Johnny is like a particularly likable character, especially in the beginning. I feel for him because I too am from a weird family that I felt extremely emotionally beholden to. Like, it took me a really long time to disentangle myself and go my own way, so I get that. And I also get the sort of rural queerness vibe. I was talking to you about it, and I was like, who would have taught him any better than what he knows? Nobody. Mm. He has no real outlets. He has no methods of coping. He doesn't know how to be kind to himself or even really others. He's kind to animals, but, like, that's it. And so when Gheorghe shows up, he's just this, like, quiet, inherently kind, low-key, sweet angel muffin prince. I'm trying not to be totally hyperbolic, but I can't help it. I love him and his sweater. It gave me a lot of feelings about toxic masculinity, coping with trauma, coping with grief because, you know, Johnny's mother had left years ago and his dad is clearly just sort of gotten on with it. Like, no one ever sat down and processed the things that they felt, and the farm seems to be not doing too terribly well. And it just gave me a lot of emotions about that and how Gheorghe slowly showed this character what human connection and tenderness is. And now we take a break for Austin Chant, the stone-hearted...
I feel like season two of THR is misrepresenting me at my core.
Yeah, you're usually such a softy. I've caught you crying at shit that doesn't even, like, filter for me.
Like, look, a kitten video. It's so cute.
I love kitten videos. I'll cry at those.
Yeah. Yeah, I reacted to it again. This is, like, Call Me By Your Name part two, because it was literally almost the same. I didn't like one of the main characters, and so I never got emotionally invested in the relationship. So my dominant emotion was, I don't think you two should have sex with each other.
I accept that you don't like Oliver from Call Me By Your Name. You have good reasons for not doing so. I accept that you don't like Johnny. I accept it. I don't like it, but I accept it. You do have this incredibly intimate view of this family and the way that it works and Johnny and his poor decisions. But it really is just about the painful unfurling of somebody who's been balled up their entire life.
Yeah.
And at the end of the movie, I don't want to get too spoilery because I want people to see this, but toward the end of the movie, Johnny says, like, I don't want to be a fuck up anymore. And that is literally the whole movie is him getting there. Yeah. And you get the feeling that on the upswing, he will be doing his goddamn best to cope healthily and be like a kind, given human being in his interpersonal relationships. And he's even made progress with his dad. And, you know, it ends on a hopeful note. And I feel like Johnny is on the path to sort of, and I hate to put it this way, but like deserve someone like Georgie, who is just inherently kind of very better good. Than he is.
he's just better. I think that's the problem I had. I was like, I want Georgie to go. He's so beautiful and good.
Yeah, he's stunning
and pure
that actor.
And kind.
Johnny has the capacity for all of those things and starts to illustrate them along the way, but it's definitely not a painless situation. It worked for me because I think that's a reality that not every piece of media looks at, is like repression, you know, aside from Johnny's queerness, which did seem, if not repressed personally, like the way that he channeled it through extremely business-like transactions of sex and more or less hiding it from his family, it was very impersonal and repressed, but like every part of him was. No part of him was at ease. And there's actually a line from one of the characters, his friend who was visiting from school, said, you know, he's a laugh like you used to be. And it's just kind of funny imagining Johnny like a little bit younger, maybe when he was still in high school, not being quite this tightly wound and headed straight for disaster zone. So I like the idea that Johnny, we see it, Johnny at the worst point in his life, and that this is reality. This happens to a lot of people, and it's extremely realistic. I'm not British at all, but I sort of relate, and it doesn't sound like it because I'm extremely effusive and I talk a lot, but I relate a lot to that extremely repressed lack of kindness for yourself and for others thing, especially as it relates to your family and how they treat you. Like, I understand that on an empathy level and beyond. So for me, it worked perfectly there because it showed how deeply painful and rending that situation can be where you're trying to become a full person who experiences kindness and emotion and like tender touch. Because Johnny didn't kiss people. He had no idea how to fucking do that. Their first sex scene is in the mud. It's bestial. It's what Johnny knows. And even then, Georgie's just like, I'm not gonna fucking spit on your dick and shove it up me. Like, no. I am a grown man.
This is not how adults conduct themselves.
He's like, I mean, you can blow me or whatever, but I have a lot of feelings about Johnny's transformation and how much I relate to it as a strange queer American.
Yeah, I feel like this is very similar to my feelings on Call Me By Your Name. It felt super duper real, and it's a beautiful film, and I think it's an incredibly real portrait of something. I appreciate it artistically. I'm trying to put my finger on why I was just like emotionally untouched by it. And I think part of it is that even though I also came from like a rural-ish, not super duper rural, but like small town and definitely isolated queer background, my coping mechanisms were just so different than that specific stage is just not one that I get that like gut, like, oh, I relate to that. Because mine was kind of like the polar opposite, was like too emotional, explosive, hyper emotional, unable to control feelings kind of deal. Way less of the like, and now I am stoic and stone faced. And
or if you're a hot mess, you're a mess in like a, I wouldn't even call it socially acceptable, but Johnny was like a drunken sort of simmering black cloud in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I was more of a hot mess and the like acting out kid who dressed obviously queer and wandered around being like, look, I'm gay, what are you gonna do about it, kind of deal. More crying, always crying, which again is not that different now, but usually now it's more happy crying. I think I'm also at a place where I'm hard to reach via stories that are so crushing, I think, because the film does a really, it has a very specific cultivated atmosphere. Almost no music that I remember.
Yeah, I actually was rewatching it to try and remember what musical cues there were aside from the one that destroyed me at the end. Mm-hmm. But there was very little.
There's almost none.
Yeah, pretty limited.
And for the most part, you see things kind of from Johnny's point of view, which is very, like, he's always kind of looking down. He's not seeing the world. His gaze is very, it's limited. It's narrowed in many, many ways, emotionally and literally. I can't connect to that, I think, at this point, because I'm sort of on the far end of that. And the things that, like, are a direct line to my emotions right now are, like, extreme sincerity.
Yeah.
My heart is sort of full right now in that 2 days before that, I listened to the finale of The Adventure Zone. And it was the best party I've ever planned, I think, sort of conceptually. My friend came over who also had not listened to the finale yet. We painted our nails just sort of over and over again, because the finale is 3 hours long, and we had to watch the episode prior to that, which is 2 hours long. So all in all, it was a 5-hour media extravaganza, and we painted our nails about 4 times each, ate fried chicken, drank an entire 64-ounce growler of ginger beer, and cried so much. Like, there was a point where tears were, like, dripping off of my face, where I was, like, trying to paint my nails and my hand was splattered with tears.
God, that's my nightmare.
I was like, oh my God, this is really excessive.
You remain a parody of yourself.
This is a little much. But, and the thing with that is, like, it is
a very different avenue of emotional connection.
Yeah. I kind of shut down in response to other people shutting down. If you present me with somebody who has, like, already locked down their emotions, I don't really have a response to that. Whereas to somebody, like, being, like, explosively emotional, I'm like, oh, me too, I'm there also with you. Because I love, like, mean queer characters. Except that I went through this film going, like, Johnny, fucking don't be an asshole.
I will say,
for 10 seconds.
The things I liked about the film was that they did not pull punches on how unkind Johnny was. And they made it evidently clear that that was not acceptable. Like, he uses a slur at Georgie, a slur for Roma people. Georgie's just like, do not call me that. And it's reiterated twice. And I don't think everyone knows that that word is a slur. Frankly, I know that not everyone knows that it's a slur. And I don't know if the relationship with that word in the UK is any different from what I've heard. But Johnny does it partially out of ignorance and also the second time to get under Georgie's skin. And the movie isn't just like, this is acceptable. And there's a beat later where he's waiting around and these two immigrants are around him talking about him in a language he does not understand. And he has a sliver of a moment of understanding what it's like to be, I guess, othered, and to understand what Georgie was dealing with literally every single fucking day of his existence. And I'm not trying to liken the two, but the movie makes it pretty evident that this was not supposed to be something that you just accepted and that Johnny would maybe revisit. Like, I feel like even if, you know, at the end of the movie, Georgie, like, went off and did something else, I think Johnny's transformation would hold. I think he would be looking for something more than what he'd had, and he had gotten some autonomy and is just kinder and more effusive about it, more demonstrative about his emotions, and can, like, process them now instead of just sort of kicking them. I really like that story, and I again relate to it as someone who was weirdly beholden to my dysfunctional and sort of broken family, and had to make a choice about whether or not I would stay with them and allow them and the unit of family to decide my fate. And actually, I think I read something about Francis Lee saying that this was basically, I mean, it's not like autobiographical, but he grew up on a farm and had to make a choice about whether or not he was going to stay on the family farm or leave to become an actor and filmmaker. And this is sort of like, well, what it may have looked like if he'd stayed in that sort of trapped, beholden to family and the family business position. It's pretty obviously based in reality. There's no part of it that rings to me as insincere, and every part of it, from the cinematography to the silences to the moments of physical contact and touch, are so deliberate. I get the feeling that if I were to read the script, even the way that people glance at each other, the pauses would be in there. It's so deliberate, and yet it doesn't feel manufactured in any way.
No, it feels super duper real, and I think to the point, like, the lack of soundtrack makes sense because there's no soundtrack in those moments in real life. There's not, like, a sad band playing when you're... like, emotionally neglectful family emotionally neglects you again, and you're just sort of there.
Yeah.
Alone.
Johnny's dad, having to live with what the stroke had done to him, and then he has a second stroke, and Johnny and his grandmother and his dad are all trying to cope with what that's doing to his father, and it's just wrenching. It's fucking wrenching as a person who, again, my family has had various chronic illnesses, and a lot of my family is dead. So I understand, like, those moments in the hospital room or those moments where, you know, his dad needs to be bathed. Like, those all rank gut-wrenchingly sincere to me, which did not help my feeling of, I wouldn't say I relate to Johnny as, like, a character. I'm very different from him. But that particular kernel of truth about what trauma and sort of isolation and being joined to your family in ways that you maybe don't want really rang true. And I was glad that he... was given an opportunity to do the work to make himself a happier, healthier person. And I want him and Georgie to get married and raise baby sheep. And I realize that that's probably not what happens. But that's what I want. And you can't take that from me. Georgie is perfect. And he, at one point, like, there's a little runty sheep that's born. And he basically, like, bottle feeds it. And he, like, has it in the little area with them to, like, keep an eye on it and keep it warm. And at one point he just has it zipped up in his coat and he's, like, feeding it. And I'm like, please kill me. Please let me die here at the altar of Georgie, who is perfect.
He's so good.
He's a good, yeah, man.
No one take my stone-heartedness as an indictment of the film, because I actually did think it was a very good film and very good in all the ways Amanda is saying. The personal emotional place that I'm at right now is the one where I go, gay wizards.
That's legit.
Wizards are gay.
That's legit. And honestly, I've talked to a couple people who've seen it. Like, Freya had watched it and did like it, but certainly wasn't, like, emotionally wrecked by it or anything. And I wouldn't even say that I'm emotionally wrecked by it. I just wasn't expecting this movie because I didn't know a lot about it. I had seen some gift sets on Tumblr and I'd heard, you know, I keep my little ear open, primed, for anything that hoves near it that's got the word queer in it. I had also heard someone comparing it to Brokeback, which is, like, in some ways an apt comparison and in some ways completely not apt at all. Holy shit. I think Frances Lee put in some shots that were like, I'm aware of the comparisons. And I see them, but I'm not going, like, I'm gonna wink at you a little, in as much as I think that movie winks at anything, but it's a completely different thing. I literally saw a critic describe it as, like, Britain's answer to Brokeback, and I was like, no, these are completely different films. Well, it kind of feels like,
it's an interesting film in that, like, it does feel, like, in the same kind of tradition of Brokeback Mountain, but one of the things I think that is interesting about it is that this is about modern day queer folk, and Brokeback Mountain is not. Yeah, the folks in Brokeback Mountain are emotionally healthier.
Excuse you. Which Georgie is healthier than both of them put together.
Georgie is fine. Johnny is not fine. Johnny,
I remember you texted, like, me, like, you know what? I never thought I'd say this, but, like, Johnny could use some lessons from Ernest Delmar on how to express himself emotionally. I will, like, say also, literally, they're very much American and British films. Brokeback is historical. Brokeback is American. It's about a very particular time and place. And in similar ways, God's Own Country is British, and specifically Yorkshire. And
yeah, and so I actually had a point there.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
My point there was that I think that is a valuable thing to contribute in terms of the idea that, like, and now we're fine, queer folks, or, like, we're over this period in our history. And I think there is value to showing how deeply fucked up queer folks can still be in relation to their sexuality in this, the year of our Lord, 2018, versus cowboys in the 60s. And I think it's the 60s?
Yeah, it's 60. I don't remember when the 60s first bit happened, but it's definitely 60s, 70s, 80s. Well, like we talked about, a lot of Johnny's warped emotions are not about being queer. It's just sort of suffered because of the situation he's in. It's compounded it. It is he has no idea how to emotionally process almost anything, let alone his relationship to queerness. Like, what does that look like for him? Well, it looks like sex. It looks like lust. It looks like hooking up with people in, like, bathroom stalls. It doesn't look like relationships. It doesn't look like human connection. So, I don't know.
Because nothing in his life looks like a human connection.
No. The closest he has is, like, he's nice to cows and sheep.
Yeah.
The cows and sheep understand him.
They do their best.
They try. I've spoiled a bit of the movie, but I do want to leave some room open for people to watch this and sort of be... It doesn't have a miserable ending by any means, and the music cue in it that destroyed me, I felt specifically emotionally targeted by this film for using Patrick Wolf's The Days as, like, its main music cue, as a really important one. I have had a relationship with Patrick Wolf's music for maybe 2006. Oh, no, it would have been earlier than that. Since, like, 2005, let's say. So 13 years. I have been to Patrick Wolf's concert, and given that he is a UK artist who doesn't tour the US very much, that's saying something. He gives me many emotions. I love him. He sort of does. He's a fucking musical genius who does extremely interesting, like, his first album has, like, hints of techno and classical music up to these, like, broad concept albums, and he's very narrative, and he's very British, and I love him deeply, and the fact that they used The Days hurt me. And you said you hadn't heard that song.
I had not heard that song.
I'm upset. Now I have to make you surprising. A Patrick Wolf playlist.
I know you've made me a Patrick Wolf playlist in the past, and I've heard a bunch of his stuff.
I think that one's from Lupercalia, so... It took me a long time to get into all the songs in Lupercalia, so maybe I just skipped it at the time. Patrick Wolf hurts me emotionally, so it was just like this 1-2 punch of, like, this is a lovely movie that made you think a lot and feel a lot of things, and then it's like, also Patrick Wolf's The Days is playing and you're really upset.
I feel like I should go back to it when I'm in more of a somber mood too.
Yeah, if you want
to because
roll around.
I can be in the mood for that, but, like, I am emotional more about good things than bad things, if that makes sense. Because I think also that's kind of the place I came to after traveling through the hellscape of 2016 and 2017 is that I just have, like, no capacity right now for being upset about bad things more than the norm. So I have capacity for being upset about, like, good things only.
Also, we talked about this too. I watch a whole lot more media than you do in general. I was thinking about this, and I've seen almost every queer movie that exists, as far as I know. And on top of that, I just watch more TV and movies than you do. So I think I'm always a little bit more primed for certain types of like film and TV to affect me.
I kind of have to be, I don't know if anybody relates to this, but I kind of have to, like, be in the mood to accept being moved by something.
Yeah. And I really, that's hard for me too, is, like, I have to be really super okay with being emotionally manipulated.
Yeah, to be ready. I had just been, you know, coming off of giving The Adventure Zone sort of a direct line to my tear ducts.
Yeah.
For about a month straight.
And it was, you know, like 80-odd hours.
It's not short. Like, it's 70 episodes, but a lot of them are longer than an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Including...
especially the finales.
The finale, which is...
3+...
It is 6.5 hours long. Total.
Boys.
Oh my god. Can I talk about how good The Adventure Zone is for 1 minute?
Yeah, let's wrap this
seconds. I think 2 weeks ago I was like 20 episodes from the end, I think is where we were last time.
Roughly, yeah.
Those last 20 episodes, holy shit. Every single arc of that show escalates to a degree I cannot believe. In terms of goodness and also in terms of emotional intensity. The last arc of that show made me cry so hard at work that I just had to stop, like, over and over again. I got 10 minutes into the finale of the show, burst into tears, and just, like, slammed the pause button. I was like, no, I can't.
You're just coming off at work as a very well-adjusted adult human.
I am, especially because I was like, okay, I can't listen to this anymore because I'm crying. I'm going to switch to My Brother and My Brother and Me, which is a comedy show. And then I promptly start giggling like a fool at my desk. And I'm just like, nobody look at me.
It's also especially weird. I've gone back to some My Brother and My Brother and Me after having, I'm on episode 36 of Taz, and I've listened to the experimental arc. So I've got like 40 plus hours into this D&D thing, right? And so when I go back to My Brother and Me, I'm like, what? This is weird. Why are they making so many goofs? When are they going to talk about, you know, when are they going to go talk to Hodgepodge and try and solve a riddle? Like, it's very jarring for me because these are the same voices, but in a very different context. I love that. Yeah. I love those damn McElroy content creators. And I'm going to start listening to a lot of the stuff that they do with their wives. Like, I've listened to Sawbones, which is what Justin does with his wife, Sydney, who is a badass doctor and just had their second kid. Congrats, Sydney, who is not listening to this podcast. But also, their kid was born at 4:20.
That's amazing.
I can just hear Travis and we're going, blaze it. I really just have to appreciate the fact that this entire family, you know, married into it and otherwise is just fucking like genius, funny, talented, nice people.
Yeah, I feel like I'm still reeling from how having a thing that is the combination of very, very funny and very, very emotional. Because again, the thing that opens my heart to the possibility of experiencing emotions right now is like humor, sincerity, hope and goodness. My life is changed, Amanda.
You know
what?
And
I mean that literally. This show changed my life. My life was changed this last month. No, I don't even know how to describe it. And also, I don't know that this is great podcast content, but I very, very literally feel a different and better person having finished this show. And I haven't had a piece of media that affected me that way in my memory. I can't remember the last time I felt this way about something where I came out on the other side of it feeling just like better about the world and my own potential to have an impact on it and shit like that. I am so moved by it.
I'm going to talk in an upcoming episode about media that has like transformed me, because we talked about informative media, but that's kind of different from media that like we started it as one person and ended it as a different. And I want to talk about that, because one of them is I think worth talking about in terms of like how it formed me as a person and also as a queer person. So let's put a little bookmark in that and come back to it in a later episode.
Like, it's a silly D&D podcast, and yet there are bits from it that just bounce around in my head now when I'm thinking about the kind of person I want to be. And that is not something I expected going in. I even expected like, oh, this is some fun queer rep and like it'll be funny and stuff. And I come out on the other side and I'm like, our capacity for love grows with every person we meet.
Don't spoil me.
I won't. Just that line is in there, and I cried about it.
Right now I'm trying to understand Griffin's fucking Vocaloid Crystal Kingdom shit.
I also am, this is, again, a thing I can't talk about at all. There's some real quality trans rep in this show.
Yeah.
And it's exciting, because I literally can't say anything about the trans character in it, because everything about her is a spoiler except that she's trans, which is like super refreshing. As the first time I think in history I've ever been really hyped for a character for plot reasons and then found out that they were trans.
Nice.
Like, that's never happened before.
That's so good. Ugh, Taz. Hope you enjoyed this journey with us through many highs and lows.
Boy, did that run the emotional gamut.
It really did.
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody, two weeks
late. Happy February 27th, I think No, there's not 27 days in February. What day is this going up? Hold on. There are,
in fact, 27.
It will be February 27th. February. Happy February 27th, everybody.
Can I just repeat, there aren't 27 days in February back to you?
Shut up. I forgot it was 28 and not 25, okay? I
25?
I don't know why I thought there were only 25 days in February. I'm
welcome
a mess
to the bullshit month.
I was like, I know there's less days in February.
Ugh. God, I hate to even imagine that.
I want it because I get paid faster.
Thanks for listening to the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
And if you could do us a favor and give us a rate and review on iTunes, that would be awesome because we're trying to get a little bit more visibility and we don't really pay every once in a while, I'll, like, run a little Facebook campaign, but we don't really pay for advertising. So anything you can do to help get us in front of people's ears, in people's ears, even weirder, is better.
If you could just help us get into your friends' ears, anything you could do.
You could just get us right up in there, right next to the drum.
Yeah.
Anyway, that would be awesome if you could do that. We will talk to you in several weeks.
Bye, folks.
Bye.
This episode of The Hopeless Romantic was produced by Daria DeFore and Amanda Jean, with art by Kezia Young and music by Carly Ann Warden. If you want to continue the conversation, follow us on Twitter at TheHRPodcast, follow us on Facebook, check out our Patreon, and please rate and review on iTunes if you enjoyed.